The Alcan 200 crowns a local champ, and the Forest Service is again trying to rewrite a management plan for the Tongass. It's a KHNS Local News. I'm Margaret Friedenauer. Those stories and more up next. It was a Haines resident who ruled the road on Saturday during the 45th running of the Alcan 200 snow machine race from the Canada border to Desdiash Lake and back. Chris Brooks finished first overall in a field of 24 racers. He averaged nearly 107 miles per hour during the 87 minutes it took him to complete the 150 miles. It was his seventh running of the race. The conditions on Saturday were moody. It was foggy and warm near the start at mile 42, with stretches of bare pavement. But it cleared up and cooled down up toward Desdiash, Brooks said.
Visibility was bad in the first part of it. There's a lot of fog. After three guardsmen, it cleared up, and it's pretty nice. There's a little bit of wind, but that's pretty normal for this time of year. And it continued to get nicer throughout the day. I mean, Desdiash, beautiful sunny day, really. So coming back was good until we got to about, I want to say, the Haines side of three guardsmen there, and then it socked in again, and all the way down to the finish line at the border was just really bad visibility.
He says he traded places with another local racer, Michael Ward Jr., for a few, before Ward started having mechanical troubles and fell behind. While Brooks averaged 107 miles per hour, his 1997 Yamaha 700SX likely peaked at speeds of more than 120, he said.
We were getting on the good side of 120 on Friday testing up on the pass.
Brooks also took the trophy for first in his class and fastest local. Not far behind, and the only other racer to average more than 100 miles per hour in the race, was George Julin of North Pole. It was his third attempt at the race, and he took second overall, despite a mishap at the end with only minor injuries to him and his machine. Nine racers did not finish. This year's race was a stark difference to last year's bitter temperatures. With a thermometer hovering around 40 degrees Saturday, race official and volunteer from Haines Junction, Jim Graham, said conditions were good.
They're not bad, actually, for a race. It's a little dry here for the first 5-6 kilometers, and it's foggy over top of the passes. But other than that, it's ideal race conditions. It's a little bit warm, maybe.
Getting ready for another attempt, Haines resident George Campbell said the warm weather was tricky for both racers and sleds.
One less layer on top, one less layer on the bottom, and a lot more prayer, hoping that everything cools well.
Campbell was joined by friend John Holmes, who came from Rhinelander, Wisconsin, for his second running of the Alcan.
This is lots of fun. Yeah, it's a great race. Longest road race in North America.
After all the racers had left, race officials remained at the starting line grilling hot dogs and waiting the 90 minutes to 3 hours it usually takes for everyone to come back over the finish line. Officials Graham, Diana Lapham, and former racer Helen Turner discussed how the race has changed and evolved over the years, especially in terms of speed.
73 or 74 when I raced, so I raced long, long time ago.
Yeah.
It was 3 hours and something total, 3 hours and 10 minutes or something like that. Yes, that was the old highway.
It was a little more of a race then.
No suspension.
Trophies were awarded Saturday night at a banquet in Haines. On Sunday, about 50 people, racers and spectators, gathered at Campbell's 18 Meadows property for drag races on a 660-foot track as part of the Alcan weekend. Rick Campbell, Dave Zugel, and Gerald Grant took first, second, and third honors in those races. The Forest Service is setting up an advisory board to help rewrite the Tongass National Forest Management Plan. It's somewhat similar to another panel that shut down last year without completing its work. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Tongass managers have a couple big jobs ahead of them. They're reviewing and updating the land management plan for the 17-million-acre forest. They're also working on a roadmap for a transition from old-growth to young-growth timber harvests. So, the agency has decided to recruit 15 people for an advisory committee. Tongass Supervisor Forrest Cole says they'll take about a year developing proposals for the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture and the Chief of the Forest Service.
What we're really trying to do is find folks that have experience with working in collaborative groups, knowledge regarding Southeast Alaska issues, willingness to work closely together, come up with a solution.
They'll include members of the industry, state and federal agencies, environmental groups, and tribal organizations. That sounds a lot like the Tongass Futures Roundtable, a larger group with a somewhat similar mission. It began about 7 years ago and shut down last spring after some timber and environmental groups quit. Cole says it broke ground that should ease the way for the advisory panel.
We had never had all of the interests in Southeast Alaska or even nationally sit down in the same room together. So it was a fairly lengthy process, probably 3 of the 6 years it was around. It took to get people to physically be able to sit in a room, have a conversation, and listen to diverse opinions.
Collaboration is the watchword.
Former Juneau Mayor Bruce Botello moderated the group and tried to keep it moving forward.
Even though the roundtable did not perhaps achieve a lot of what it had initially set out to do, it created, I think, a climate of discussion between parties who need to be talking with each other, but who historically did not.
Roundtable organizers hope to develop an overall compromise to ongoing Tongass timber battles, but Cole says it did more than meet.
There was a bridge timber proposal that was put together by Tongass Futures. It got us out of a heavily litigated number of projects that provided timber along the way to keep the current timber industry alive.
The Southeast Conference, a regional development organization, was part of the roundtable, but it joined the exodus of timber and state government representatives that led to its dissolution. The conference last year proposed its own Tongass management plan. Leaders hope to advance that as part of the advisory group's discussions.
I'm excited about it. I guess I should say I'm ready for another round because you just can't stop trying.
Shelley Wright is the conference's executive director. She says the new panel has a better chance of succeeding.
The roundtable really was not an official advisory group, so I think it may be a little bit different. You know, the undersecretary has actually said this is for his information, so I think that is going to give it a little more weight, so to speak.
Those interested in joining the Tongass Advisory Committee need to apply by February 27th. This is Ed Schoenfeld, reporting from Juneau.
Last week's storm in Southeast caused a state-owned breakwater in Gustavus to dislodge from its pilings and wash ashore on the beach. The 200-foot steel structure also serves as a popular floating dock facility for local residents running charter fishing and whale-watching boats. As Lisa Fu reports, Gustavus residents are wondering what this means for their tourist season.
I didn't want to watch, but I couldn't look away. It was pretty intense.
Gustavus resident Pep Scott says she was at the dock facility Tuesday from noon to 6 p.m. watching the floating breakwater and pilings rock back and forth. Workers with the State Department of Transportation had tried to secure it with heavy line, but it didn't work. The floating structure eventually broke loose and landed on the beach. Scott calls the breakwater, which also serves as a dock, Gustavus's livelihood.
I run a fish processing plant, so I rely on the charter boats and the commercial fishing boats. And without a float for anybody to come and put their boat at or for any goods to come in or go out, we're just kind of stuck.
As the breakwater dislodged, it swung into city-owned wooden floats, causing damage to those as well, and leaving Gustavus residents without many options for docking, especially during the busy tourist season coming up in May.
At this point in time, if we had to go with what's left, it looks like we've got about a 40-foot section of dock that 20 to 30 boats would have to use every day.
Mike Halbert has owned Glacier Bay Sport Fishing for almost 30 years. Between the end of May and September, he takes up to 8 tourists out on the water every day. Boats use the state-owned breakwater and city-owned wooden floats for whale watching, charter and commercial fishing, kayak transport, and recreation. Halbert says the community with a year-round population of 450 relies heavily on tourism.
It's life or death. If it's not there, then none of us can operate.
The breakwater went into service in 2012 and cost the state just under $1.4 million. It's located in the same facility as Gustavus's ferry dock, which was not damaged during Tuesday's storm. Al Clow is Southeast Director of DOT. He says a storm in December had previously damaged the floating breakwater. At the time, the state conducted surveys and determined that it had to be removed due to unstable pilings.
Unfortunately, before we could get a crew to get a barge and a crane mobilized out there to remove that breakwater, another storm came in.
Klaus says he has no idea when the breakwater will be repaired, but it's not going to be put back in the near future.
We have to redesign a new structure, and then we have to permit it and secure funding and everything else. There is not a quick fix. And obviously that breakwater, the way it was installed, is not robust enough to handle this major storm event we had. So we're not just going to put the same thing back in there.
According to the National Weather Service in Juneau, the maritime wind in Gustavus Tuesday was at least 40 miles per hour. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
For KHNS News, I'm Margaret Friednauer. Special thanks to Lisa Fu and Ed Schoenfeld for help with this report. Thanks for joining us for your local news on KHNS. We appreciate your support.